Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, passion for excellence. Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze. Get used to more. And by Dow Automotive Systems, improving durability and increasing design flexibility with Betamate structural adhesives at DowBetamate.com.
This is Out of Line After Hours with John McElroy, episode 86 for Thursday, January 13, 2011. G. No. GT.
Watch Out of Line After Hours live at outoflinedetroit.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern or 2400 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Out of Line After Hours in the iTunes Store. Well, here we are again, Out of Line After Hours, Thursday night, except this time we're not in the studio. We're in Camillo Pardo's studio, and Peter's here with me.
Yeah, which is awesome, by the way.
And just for anybody tuning in that don't know, Camillo Pardo is the guy who designed the Ford GT, and we've got some gigantic and beautiful paintings of his.
The modern Ford GT.
The modern Ford GT, yeah. Right, as opposed to the GT40.
Yeah, when he was at Ford.
When he was at Ford, right. And Camillo's not with us on the program right now because even though we're in his studio, he's making an airport run going to pick up a friend.
Yeah.
So he'll join us sometime back here in the studio.
Eventually.
I'm sure we'll get him on the show.
Yeah.
Because this is why we came here, to get him on the show.
Yeah.
But that's okay. We got plenty to talk about because this week was the Detroit Auto Show.
Yes.
And you did a whole column on it that had me practically in tears reading part of it.
Well,
you went to town, Peter.
Yeah, I did. I soaked the auto show in, and I don't know if anyone watched me walk around the show, but I don't write anything down. I just soak it in, and I'm like a savant.
I eventually, if you say so yourself.
Yeah, if I say so myself, because then I wander around in a daze all day and then end up back on my computer and just start, you know.
That's fine. It's stream of consciousness.
Yeah.
And, you know, everything that's going to come to your mind is the stuff that
we got it all
you
in
should
there.
Really
we
remember.
Got Amway meetings, seance, Bismarckian nightmares, Blantastic Passats. It was all good.
Okay, so boom, you know, clean sheet. What's your instant reaction? What about the show?
Overall, positive for the industry, obviously.
Uh-huh.
Uptick, the vibe is good. We've had two pretty bad auto shows. This finally felt like an auto show again. All the bad German press conferences where they get up there and put everyone to sleep.
Yeah, read their financial reports.
No, but I thought overall it was good. There were very few bad things at the show. It was good. I have to single out the Passat. I just thought it was...
Because this was Volkswagen's big coming out party.
Yeah, now
here's their first car for America, the designed for America, built in America.
Right, and first of all, they dumbed down the Jetta to lower the price of the Jetta. So there's a price leader Jetta around $15,900.
Right.
Now, you can option the Jetta up so it's a proper Jetta.
Right.
But this car...
not like the old Jetta.
Yeah, but this car, this Passat, is supposed to be up against, you know, Camry, Accord, whatever. And they bring it out, they take the wraps off, and it was just like, you got to be kidding me. I mean, it is just this... It's almost cynical the way they look at this market and this business and the future of Volkswagen. It's just like, you know what? We can do Blantastic and you will like it. And it's just, I was just stunned. And yeah, but you look at the interior, yeah, it's okay. But it's just okay. I mean, and just okay isn't good enough, I don't think, in this market. Not when you have a Sonata running around, right?
Yeah, well, I got late to the press conference. When I saw the car up on stage, I went, is that the Passat or is that the Jetta?
Yeah.
I can't tell.
Yeah, no, it's calculated blandness. It's amazing.
You know, the interior, like you said, it's nice. It's competent. It's competitive. nice knee room in the rear.
Back. Yeah, I saw the little bit you did on Autoline Daily.
Yeah. And they're talking like 20 grand base price. Okay, so that's in the ballpark.
So it'll be about 24 with stuff on it.
Right. But I don't see how they're going to go to, you know, overnight 200,000 cars of this. I think it's just going to blend into the background.
Yeah, they're saying 800,000 by 2018. Wow.
You know, one thing I learned in all the interviews I did is that last year, Subaru sold more cars than Volkswagen. Volkswagen brand, this doesn't include Audi, in the U.S. market. And it was like, wow. You know, that just shows you the kind of goal that Volkswagen's supposedly going to hit. You know, right now Subaru is outselling it.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, and I wasn't the only one that thought it was bland. I mean, you know, you're hearing it all over the place. And although I had one reader in Vermont who's such a homer for Volkswagen, and just he's really buys into the bland, that it's the simple Volkswagen returns. And I would say, no, it's a Volkswagen for simpletons is what it is.
Well, you know, I thought it was an okay car. I don't think there's any problem with it. But, you know, if you're going to smash one out of the park and, you know, take on Hyundai, for example.
Exactly. Just okay in this
business.
Isn't going
to do it. This is a car that had to, you know, go over the top of the Sonata. And I don't think it's happened.
No.
So what else? What else did you like there?
Well, you know, what's not to like about the Porsche 918 RSR? Just
except that it's no longer there. They just had it 2 days for the press conferences, media days.
Yeah, and you said they yanked it today.
And I was down there for what they call industry days, you know, when they let anybody else in the industry in. No 918. I couldn't believe it. It was just there for 2 days.
So all you kids clamoring to get into the show, just...
Yeah, forget about it.
You're not going to see the 918, but boy, was it cool.
Not only stunningly beautiful, but I'm just wowed by the technology. You know, this idea of the
flywheel.
The flywheel, right?
And it, you know, the thing is, I just love the compactness of it. It's just really taut, and it looks like a Porsche, which, you know, doesn't look like a Frankenstein car.
And not only that, not only does it look, I mean, it's 911-ish, even though it's clearly not a 911.
Yeah, but 911 Cayman-ish. It's really got a lot of Cayman in it. Mm-hmm. I just, what's not to like? It's great.
Well, you know, and we should explain it in case, you know, nobody's heard about this flywheel, where the car has two electric motors up front. And I can't remember what they add, but like 200 horsepower to the front. And then it's got a V8 where the power goes to the rear. Driver hits a button, boom, you dump all this electricity into the batteries for the front wheels and you go screaming off. But the energy is stored in a flywheel, not in a battery.
Developed by Williams Grand Prix Engineering, the Formula One team.
And I just find it intriguing. And I'm hoping that Porsche is using this as a test bed to introduce that technology in its road cars.
Oh, I think it's pretty clear. The next vehicle they do is going to be a racer that fits in some class. Because this car doesn't really fit. They'll run it at the 24 hours of Nürburgring and at Spa. But their next one will be probably a car that will go for the overall win at Le Mans. And then we will see that technology.
What this flywheel technology is smaller, lighter, and cheaper than batteries, and by a big margin, too. Yeah.
And as they race it, it will get smaller, lighter, and cheaper. Patrick Long did a nice piece for the LMS about how they drive the car. They use the electric boost coming out of corners. So they stand on it quick. They get on the power sooner, and then they have front wheels pulling the cars out of the corners. So it's wild.
It is wild.
What else did you like?
Let's jump more mainstream. Ford had a concept vehicle there that they called the Vertrek.
That thing is very impressive.
It's very impressive, though I hate the name Vertrek. I find it hard to say.
Well, it's going to be the Escape.
It's going to be the Escape.
Yeah.
Although, for anybody who's familiar or from Europe or familiar with the Ford Kuga in Europe,
it's going to be the next Kuga.
It's the
Escape.
Next Kuga, but because, you know, it's one Ford. Yeah. We're going to get it, too, but they're going to call it the Escape
and
here.
And it's quite good. It's really...
There's nothing wrong with the Escape right now, but it's very boxy, formal, very 20th century. I'm saying that this Vertrek is going to bring the Escape into the 21st century.
Yeah, it's gorgeous, really. They did a nice job on it.
I mean, it is a concept. You can see things like there's no B-pillar there, so it's... You know, there will be some changes for production, and they've got it raised up and monster meats on it and that kind of thing. But it looks pretty cool. I think the present-day Kuga looks pretty good.
Yeah.
So this just takes it the next step, and I thought that was pretty cool.
And, you know, I'll tell you that C-Max is impressive, too.
Yeah.
You know, this the smaller kind of crossover minivan thing... I think Ford nailed it, and they're going to do well with that, too.
Yeah, because today's minivans, as we've talked about, whether you're mentioning the Honda Odyssey, Toyota Sienna, Nissan Quest, Chrysler Town & Country, they ain't so mini anymore.
No, they're big.
And that's fine if you need all that space. But they're also, if you get all the things that you want on them, they can be really expensive. I had a Honda Odyssey that was $43,000. I mean, most families, I don't think, are going to go that route.
Well, someone mentioned to me, well, you know, Mazda only sells 15,000 Mazda 5s. Okay. Well, the C-Max is a different vehicle. It's executed to a much higher level. And don't forget how many Ford dealers there are out there.
Well, yeah.
Which is a whole nother thing.
Right.
So if you think that the... C-Max is going to barely outsell the 5, you're dreaming.
Yeah, and, you know, Mazda's a real puzzle to me. You know, I like their products. I've always liked their products. But, boy, they're always like in, you know, Class C, you know, a couple levels down. Not that they're bad. Not that they're a C-class kind of a car. I don't mean in size, but, you know, relative importance of the company. But they just can't seem to break out of this niche that they're in.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of one of the mysteries of the industry.
So what else did you like there or notice?
I love the M version of the 1 Series. I know a lot of people are poo-pooing it, but
not me.
I love that car. Boy, is it good up close.
The right size.
Yeah, wow. And the fenders, beautiful. The bulge fenders. The thing is, it's just really good.
It's terrific.
As opposed to the 650 convertible, which I called, they should have named it the Bismarck. This thing is just, it's so massive when you're next to it. It's just like, is this a BMW or is this a Rolls convertible? I mean, it's just really, by the way, Bentley was great at the show, you know, three vehicles, you know, they don't really care what anyone else is doing. Love that. Mm-hmm. Love the new Audi A6.
And the A6, you know, everybody's very familiar with the North American Car of the Year and the Truck of the Year, which the Volt and the Ford Explorer won. We could talk more about that if we want. But on Tuesday of press days, they bring in something like 25 of the top designers from all around the world to walk the show, and they judge what's the best concept car, what's the best production car, and they chose the Audi A6 as the best production. This is the third year in a row that Audi has won that award.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're just on a roll, and that thing is just gorgeous. And then they also chose the 918 Porsche as the best concept, which was kind of a no-brainer.
Right.
I mean, what were the other concepts?
Well, the Ford Vertrek.
Okay, well, yeah, that was kind of a production-based concept.
Right.
And then the Mini Paceman.
Right.
Which they've announced they're going to build.
I love the taillights on that.
Yeah, I know you did.
I really did. I like that look.
I don't know about the vehicle, but I don't know about Mini. You know, walk through Mini and, you know, the Countryman, it's just, like, weird. It's just... It's strange to watch.
I need to see a breakdown of their sales. I don't think I've got that, you know, by model. Because I'd like to know what's really selling in their lineup or what's not.
Did you see, well, Ford's done this, but they had the Mustang Boss of the Dyno?
No, I missed it. You know, look, I spent, I don't know,
I mean,
how many
you can
hours.
Get,
I lived in Cobo Hall for 3 days this week.
In the...
At least
on the media days, you can get in and start up and do a a pass on the with the it's you know it's bolted down on a dyno. It was awesome.
I heard it, but I never got over there. There's still a lot of the show I haven't seen yet.
I think it was the head of the Mustang program, and we had him on the After Hours for the Dream Cruise.
Oh yeah.
I forget his name now.
Yeah,
but he was in it, and he did a pass, a drag strip pass. And I was on the other side of the wall. I said, what the hell is that? then I realized that it was just, it's very cool.
Well, actually, I think Ford's got the best display there. We could even talk displays. And, you know, so you've got that thing, do the engine on the dyno. They also have slot cars with an almost Laguna Seca-ish kind of layout. I mean, it's not just black plastic slot car track on a floor thing. It's got trees and mountains and bushes.
That's a local guy that's been written up in Automobile, and then Auto Week wrote about him. And, you know, they're not cheap, but he's being commissioned. I think they're between $5,000 and $7,000.
I can believe it. It was beautiful. I couldn't believe it. I just looked at the track just thinking I want to go there, even though I was standing right there.
It was stunning. it was very cool.
And then Ford did another thing. They got big video screens and racing seats on what are like four-post shaker kind of things. So not only are you able to drive these video games, you know, the whole seat and steering wheel and everything's moving. So it's all HD and it's big screen. It's like you're on a track. You can pick different cars, different tracks to race on. And I went by that stand 3 different days trying to think, man, I want to get in there. I want to try this thing. And there's always a line. And that's with the media and industry people. So, you know, when the public gets there, you can't even come close to it. It's going to be lines down forever.
So what about GM? GM had the Verano, Buick Verano,
right.
And the Chevy Sonic.
And the Sonic, you know, is, I think, notable for two reasons. Number one is not only are they going to build the car in Michigan with UAW labor, they're moving it out of South Korea to build it in Michigan with UAW labor. So I think that's a good sign. That's positive.
Yeah, and the Sonic was formerly known as the Aveo.
Horrible name, or Aveo, as Aveo. Some people say.
But it bears no resemblance to the old car.
Right. Plus, we know who named it, because GM put out a release saying that the naming group named the car the Sonic, and Nina Beckhardt, who's been on the show with us before, was the one who did it.
Yes. It was quite a coup for her and her small company. So.
Yeah.
Very cool.
I thought that was pretty cool, too.
I don't know. The Verano, when I look at Buick and I know what they're trying to do, but the Verano is awfully close to the Regal.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Jim Hall and I walk around. He said, well, the psychographics are different, you know? Bottom line is, I don't care what the psychographs say. When you walk into the showroom, it's just like, now, is that the Regal? Oh, no, that's the Verano. Is that the Verano? No, that's the Regal. You know, they got to be careful.
Right.
Because, you know, and I know GM's sitting on a war chest of money. And they are absolutely convinced they can differentiate anything. But they should be careful.
I would agree with you. Those two cars, especially front on from the grill, is when you can go which one is which.
Yeah. We saw the new Honda.
The Civic.
Yeah.
I'm glad they told me it was the new Civic. Otherwise, I would never have known.
Yeah.
I swear to God, man, that thing, I guess it's very subtle evolution because
I
didn't
pick up on it. The coupe has very much of the current Accord coupe in it. We'll have to see him on the road. You know, it's kind of hard to figure. The best part
was the sedan?
Well, no, the best part of going out and looking at the Hondas when one of the photographers was taking pictures and opened the door of the coupe, and of course, they're dummies.
And
the door handle.
I hate when that happens.
And I was just everyone was just like laughing. The poor guy stuck it back on.
Oh, man. Well, you know, they had two cars, the coupe and the sedan. The sedan's not there any longer either. In fact, it was not even there for the second of the press days. They shipped that off to Montreal. And when I said, what are you guys thinking? They said, you got to realize it's the number one selling car in Canada, the Civic is. So the Montreal Auto Show, I guess, is about to ramp up.
And you pointed out an interesting thing. You know, they do this thing called Industry Days, and that's where all the manufacturers,
suppliers
go down there, and that Ford had all the focuses locked up.
Right, because they don't want everybody doing their competitive benchmarking against them.
Yeah.
Which happens anyway. Yeah. It even happens during the press days.
Well, yeah, you see a bunch of people doing measurements and stuff in the press days, and it's weird. Yeah,
somebody was complaining to me, I can't believe they're measuring the thickness of the hinge in the glove box door. But I'll tell you, the place was packed today. I mean, those industry days, there's way more people there than for press days.
Yeah. Well, that's almost like a regular day of the show now.
It really is. It's almost like a public day, right? But the public days are even more jam-packed.
Yeah, yeah. Opening weekend will be huge. What else? Okay, we saw the new Chrysler 300, which is nicely done.
I thought it was very nicely done.
I'm not wowed by the Compass at all. I don't, you know.
Well, it's better. It looks better.
It's better, but
the interior is nicer, but I'm with you. That was such an ungain. The proportions are just.
And, you know, I know the 200's better inside, but it's still, I still don't.
There's something about the headlights or the front end. It just doesn't work for me.
It still looks like a committee car. I mean, it just does.
Yeah.
And I saw the Black Ops Wrangler.
I got to tell you, every time I walked past there was somebody sitting in it having their picture taken. I couldn't believe it. Even television reporters having I don't mean for their broadcast. I mean having their pictures taken in it.
I mean, they've hit a chord, struck a chord with that one. Let's see what else. Mercedes had the electric green, electric SLS. Mercedes was big on this satin finish.
Oh, we got to talk about that.
Because you know what? It's hard enough to find a body shop that can do glossy finishes today because they're just got that down. There's great shops all over the country. Now they introduce this satin finish that looks horrendously difficult to finish off.
It looks terrific.
It looks good, but
we should explain to everybody because it's, you know, when we were at the Paris show, you know, what I had picked up on is this flat matte.
Yeah, it's not matte.
It's not matte. It's not flat.
It's a
satin.
Yeah.
So there's a shine to it, but there's absolutely no gloss, no reflection whatsoever, no depth of gloss like the paint guys like to talk about. But it does show up all the highlights, all the lines on the exterior of the car really well. And that's why I like it. But to your point, who's going to fix this stuff? You get a scratch in it? Just a scratch is going to be $1,000.
Yeah. And the Mercedes display, I mean, I don't know. Well, first of all, Lexus all-white cars. Are you kidding me? The most vanilla cars on the road. And they decide to paint them all white, except for the bright orange LFA and that sickly green, the Lexus version of the Prius.
Mm-hmm.
And which we should talk about Toyota because they're becoming the Prius of car companies now.
They are.
They're adding two more Priuses. I think they ought to just wave the flag and say, you know what, we're Prius. We're Prius. We're going to be Prius. You can't even buy something that doesn't have a Prius. It's going to be even more. Remember when GM in the heyday of the Cutlass, the old Cutlass,
Everything was a Cutlass.
Cutlass Supreme, Cutlass Calais, Cutlass whatever.
Right, Sierra.
Yeah, Sierra, you know. So.
But they sold a million Cutlasses.
Yeah.
I'm serious. 1980, they sold, Oldsmobile did a million units that year, and like 90% of them were Cutlasses. So Toyota came out with a station wagon version.
Kind of a crossover.
That they're calling the Prius V, V as in Victor, you know, like, you know, Volvo uses V for wagons, too, so I think that's where it's coming from. And
the Prius C, which is...
It was a four-door, but it was...
It's almost Scion size.
It's not, at least sheet metal-wise, it's not based on the current Prius like the wagon is, the V.
But
they're saying they want this Prius line to outsell the Camry. Of course, the Camry, they pretty much do it with one car. This is going to take three different sheet metals to do it.
And then did you notice that there was a new Corolla there?
They never, ever mentioned it. In fact,
I know, but Jim Hall and I were walking by, and Jim said, look, there's a new Corolla. Just like, what?
Right.
I was just sitting there.
Right. In fact, I asked Bob Carter from Toyota. We did an interview with him about it, and it was like, oh, yeah, we got this thing. It's like they don't even want to talk about it.
Yeah.
It's a mild facelift, I guess. So.
And it's still a disconnect for me. I don't care. I mean, the Chrysler display, yeah, they've got these little hot rod, little Fiat 500s around there. Mm-hmm. But then they throw a bright yellow Ferrari 458 Italia there. And for what? I mean, really? Just so they can put some babes next to it and say it's part of our company? Whatever.
It was, yeah.
I like looking at the car, but why was it there?
Mm-hmm.
Same with Lincoln. I mean, you know.
Buried in the back. You wouldn't even know it's there,
well,
practically.
Yeah, and they've got all these new their current product line is, you know, getting up to speed. They've got all this great stuff coming. Yet they plop the Continental convertible from Entourage in there. And that's,
which is what, about a 61
it's a
convertible?
It's a 65. I mean, everyone loves those old Continentals. But the problem is Lincoln has, and Ford has been adamant, we are not going to do nostalgia marketing.
Mm-hmm. Why is it there?
Yeah, we are going forward with Lincoln, and I know they are because I've seen some of their stuff, and it's fabulous. But why was it there? I love the car, love the show, still didn't belong there.
Chevrolet had an old car, too, like a 1914-ish Chevy. Early Chevy.
They also had a Suburban, mm-hmm. which they've done before.
Yeah.
But the GM, you know, the GM...
The only thing that I might give them some credit for is they're doing this whole thing, Chevy runs deep, and to me it's like deep in the heritage of the country, blah, blah, blah. So here's some of our deep heritage cars. So that sort of makes sense to me.
I get that, but I still don't like the line.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a positioning statement. I still don't think it's the line
mm-hmm.
that it should
yes.
be. Anyway.
Yes, we've talked about that.
Let's see, what else did we see? The Acura display was unbelievable.
But they have the best coffee bar,
yes.
at least for the media days.
Yeah, but when they park all their cars together, it looked like a parking lot, an abandoned parking lot at a dealer. I mean, they were just all these horrendously ugly cars parked together in perfectly lined up. And I know they were parked that way because of the media, you know, the lounge they had. But still, boy, that was bad.
Yeah.
Really bad.
Yeah. Kia had that concept minivan. We were talking about concepts earlier. The KV7.
Right.
That I actually kind of liked. You know, one of the things that they said, and this is a Peter Schreier design, too, that they're celebrating the box. You know, they're saying everyone's trying to come out with minivans that are, you know, supposed to be for people who hate minivans. Or this one's really stylish. And then he said, no, you know, it's a box, and we're not going to try to hide the fact that it's a box. And then they tried to really open up the interior, and they had a concept interior that looked like a little lounge. It was actually pretty nice.
Yeah.
But I like the idea behind it.
Yeah. What about the Hyundai? What's it?
Well, the Veloster.
Yeah.
I don't know. The Veloster, to me, kind of reminds me of Spyker's, like way overdone.
Yeah.
Way overdone. Now, there's some intriguing things about it. It's asymmetrical in that there's one door on the driver's side and two on the passenger.
It's just been done before.
It's been done, but in the past it was always on the driver's side, and the rear door was a suicide door, rear hinged, and you had to open the front door to get that little access door open. Not so on the Hyundai Veloster. I'm not sure that makes any difference, though. I'm not sure anybody has said, I need a...
You know, I know we're at the point where everything Hyundai touches turns to gold, but, you know, I'm not so sure about this one.
I'm not so sure either. And getting in that third door, you know, my analogy was it's like stuffing yourself into the Apollo capsule to go do a moon trip. It's a tight squeeze. And then they had a concept there, car. Oh, no. Let's not get off the Veloster yet, because there are a couple of things interesting about it. I think John Krafchick told me it's 2,500 pounds. It's lighter than the Mini.
Yeah.
And that's very interesting, you know.
With some power.
With some power to it. And, you know, one thing that Hyundai keeps bragging about is that they've got their own steel company. Their own blast furnace, so they can cook up exactly the greatest steels
that
they need.
Well, I know. He said it in the Amway meeting. I mean, in the press conference.
The Amway meeting? But So anyway, there's some. I'll reserve judgment until I drive the car.
Yeah.
Because when I saw pictures of the Nissan Juke, I went, this is a joke. Until I drove the car, and then it was like, oh, it clicks. I get it. This is actually fun to drive. So I'll hold off. They also had a concept car, Hyundai did, called the Curb. And again, I don't know, to my eye, a bit overdone.
Yeah.
Maybe concept cars should be overdone, and if that's the case, they nailed it.
Yeah. What else? You know, Audi had the, where we'll never see over here, the R8 GT,
mm-hmm.
which is the super lightweight, somewhat decontented, higher performance R8, which is something almost like 300,000, and it had that satin white finish to it.
Yeah.
Well, it was really nice, but I couldn't imagine fixing the thing.
No, in fact, I think it was on the Veloster. Hyundai had a satin finish as well. So when you see the same sort of technology, in this case paint technology, show up at an auto show from several manufacturers.
It's a trend.
It's a trend, man.
It's not
you
a fad.
Know they're testing this heavily.
It's not a show thing. It's a fad. It's not a show fad. It's a definitely a soon-to-be production trend.
Right. And then BYD, the Chinese company, was there. I don't know if you went to their press conference.
No.
It was weird. It was, I don't know, at some point they were talking about Noah's Ark. And they were going to save the planet because they have all this electronic technology or electric technology. And, you know, they talk about they're a battery company who got into the automotive business. And you look at their cars and you go, yeah, I can see it. The cars are... They're not, well, they got like this little sedan that
they're
they
bizarre,
sell in China.
Let's face it.
And it looks like an old Corolla. And then they have this sport utility that looks like an old Lexus RX. And then they have an electric car, too, that doesn't look half bad, but clearly their expertise is in batteries, not in making cars. So I don't know. I don't know where the whole thing with BYD is going to go. But it was cool to see that there was a Chinese car company there.
Yeah. And, you know, there are some incongruous things. Like, Dub was plopped in the middle of the show for I don't know why. I mean, and Toyota had, like, a little sidebar that looked like a SEMA show thing. That was weird.
Right.
And, you know, but overall, it was a good show.
Yeah, there were some other things there, too, like... that you normally don't see on the main floor. ZF, the German transmission company, had disassembled transmissions laying out there.
Yeah.
That was kind of weird. And Denso, and I can't remember who all was there.
But, you know, they talked about you're going to see all these big improvements in Cobo Hall.
I didn't see it one.
They said the lobby was supposed to be, you know, and I was just like, really?
Yeah.
I missed it.
The only thing I'll say is I heard that the whole setup and everything went extremely smooth, you know, that behind the scenes
they
where
fixed,
we're not going to notice
they
things.
They fixed a lot of things. That's good.
They got rid of a lot of subcontractors. They just broomed them out because, as we've talked about, there was so much corruption going on there. And those cases haven't even hit the courts yet. But so in talking to some of the car companies, they all thought that everything was going a whole lot better. You know,
yeah.
The show's not over, so let's see how it goes. But that was a good step forward.
Do we have to do commercial or anything?
Oh, yeah, we do. I'm glad you said something. In fact, we should talk about the Chevrolet Cruze right now. And you can all check it out at Chevrolet.com/Cruze. Don't forget that the Cruze is the class of its class right now. I don't know. What do you want to say about it? I can read all this stuff.
You know, I think it's good. Every time I drive one, I said, boy, these guys really nailed it. But we saw the future of the Cruze competition at the show, which is the focus, and that's going to be a major league battle.
Major league.
In the U.S.
Yeah,
market.
Yeah. I would agree. But we should mention the Cruise comes with...
The Cruise is good, though.
Six-speed manual or automatic, Pioneer premium nine-speaker sound system, more passenger and cargo room than the Civic, Corolla, or Focus.
And if you check option box C, you can get a ZR1 motor in it.
No.
They'll put it in the back seat for
you. Right. Otherwise, you'll get a 1.8-liter Ecotec with 138 horsepower. With the manual six-speed, gets 26 city, 36 highway. And that's better manual transmission fuel economy than the Civic, the Corolla, or the Focus. So
Current Focus.
That's right. Check it out at Chevrolet.com/cruise. And, of course, that's C-R-U-Z-E.
John, why don't you do one more spot?
One more spot? Okay, let's do Bridgestone. And all we can mention is that you can check out all the information at BridgestoneTire.com. And why don't we do Dow as well while we're at it? And that's DowBetaMate.com. And, you know, one thing that I like to keep coming back to is this diesel particulate emissions filter that they've got called Aerify. It's a high-efficiency particulate filter with very low back pressure. You can downsize it for smaller packages without compromising performance. And, of course, you can do all that at lower cost. And as we've talked about before, Audi liked it so much they put it on their diesel race cars. And that ought to tell you something about how efficient this thing can be. You can get more information of Dow at DowBetaMate.com. And so anyway, Chips, our producer here, has just informed us the chat room would like to think or know what are our favorites.
Go ahead, John. What are you?
Well, it's hard for me to beat what the designers picked. You know, the Porsche 918 is the best concept of the show.
Agreed.
The Audi A6 is the best production car of the show.
I would tie the Audi A6 with the 1 Series M.
M Series. And you were talking about the Focus before. I'm knocked out by the Ford
Focus. And the C-Max are going to be mainstream hits.
Right.
Huge.
Absolutely. And we wish we could talk about Nissan, Simon, but Nissan's not at the show.
But they'll be back next year from what we hear. Right? Yes.
That's right. So, and we welcome them with open arms.
And we know you're listening, Simon, in Tokyo, so we're thinking about you. Well, we should mention, you know, one thing they did show, which is very cool, was that performance version of the Sonic.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah, it's trick. And what it is they've got all the trick pieces you're going to be able to get for the Sonic on one car. And that was pretty cool.
Oh, I'm sorry I missed that.
If the viewers want to see it, it's on Auto Extremist website in the on the table column.
Well, like I said, that's what's so crazy about the show. As much as I as many hours as I spent at the show, I still never saw everything.
Well, you know, Jim Hall and I walked the show, and we couldn't get a word in edgewise with each other, but. You know, because, you know, Jim is the man who knew too much.
Right.
And but we had a blast talking about the cars. And I think we saw more of the show probably than you were able to do because you were busy doing.
Well, let you know that not only was I there today, I ran into Jim Hall on the floor today. So, yeah, he's going to have that whole show memorized if he doesn't already.
He's here, really.
Did you happen to see the A8 W12, too, on the floor?
You know, I walked through the Audi stand several times, and I know I saw it, but I didn't know it for that.
Wow. I mean, the interior on it, Jim was pointing out there were a lot of special stuff that you can order if you know what you're doing. But the W12 has the Audi grille, and then behind the regular Audi grille, there's crosshatch aluminum.
Oh my God! Yeah, no, I'd like to see that.
The detailing on it was something. And I of course, love the Bentley Mulsanne. I just think the thing is just awesome.
Right. So we're being told that Camillo's back from his airport run. He's going to join us any moment now. We're in downtown Detroit right now, right on Woodward Avenue, where Camillo Pardo has his studio.
Now, Camillo used to be at Ford.
Right, on the Ford design staff.
And here he comes.
And here he comes now. So we're glad you're here, Camillo.
Yes.
And we're glad we're at your place.
Yeah, well, I mean, this place is very versatile.
Yeah, you had a great party here Monday night.
Yeah.
So tell the audience a little bit about this. This is called Designer's Night. It's been going on for some years, but fill it in from there.
Well, it was our 14th, and I started hosting these when I came back from Italy in 97. The place was really quite rough. Actually,
the building that we're in.
Yeah. This was a retail space that was full of aisles and had been in use. Well, the building's from 1919.
Wow.
It had gone.
What was it originally? Just retail back then?
It was retail downstairs, a dance hall, a ballroom upstairs, and a Chinese restaurant, and arcade. Arcades were big back then, I guess.
In 1919?
In the 20s.
Really?
20s, 40s. It also held a billiards room downstairs in the 40s. So yeah, I could tell all this by the magazine articles. They're all taped on the walls. Hmm. You know, cartoons about the war and baseball players and stuff like that. Regular pool hall things.
So why'd you buy the building?
I bought the building because I'd rented several studios down here when I graduated from CCS, or before I even graduated from CCS.
Which is just down the road here.
Yeah, CCS is very close, College for Creative Studies. I created a studio in one of the homes that I lived in, and then we just evolved into several studios after that. And this one was, you know, this one was mine. I finally owned one. So the money I put into it and the work that I put into it, you know, stayed with me. The Designer's Night has gone through this building since its, I would say, very rough stages. But they kind of liked it because
it's real.
It made people feel like they were going somewhere they weren't supposed to be.
In Detroit.
And they were getting away with something. You know, it was, Jay Mays described it as a speakeasy look.
Yeah.
You know, so that was way before the facade was finished. There was torn plastic covering the top windows, and they'd be blowing in the wind, you know, and people are lining up. And we're talking about everybody from, you know, directors, VPs, to the latest, greatest new hires. And they'd all line up and come inside, and we'd have our jazz band and a bar that, you know, evolved. You know, there was a turning point when I asked Ford, you know, I asked Jay and, you know, their staff if they could help me, because we were trying to bring in Sid Mead to speak.
The famous designer who's out in, what, L.A. or San
yes.
Francisco?
He's in L.A., and we asked him if he would, you know, give a presentation here for the, you know, for Designer's Night and the Detroit Auto Show. And he said yes, but because he had spoken, I think, for Auto Week, maybe, he says, I'm going to have to charge you, you know. And I said, all right. And when the numbers came together, it was more than we had. So I went right to Ford and said, look, what are the chances of you guys helping us? And the response was quickly, it was yes. And we had accumulated some sponsors, and Ford decided that I should thank them very much for everything, but that Ford's going to take care of it.
Wow.
So at that point, you know, there was a ramp up in the type of atmosphere and presentation and, you know, accommodations that were involved in Designer's Night. But Designer's Night's gone through a lot. It used to be at the Fox Theater
Really?
Yeah, and I can remember...
I was never at that one. I've been at a few of them, but never there.
Well, Car Styling and... was it Taxi Magazine? There was some magazines from Japan that put it on. And the Fox Theater is a very, very glamorous, you know, beautiful theater. And I can remember, you know, Jack Telnack giving his presentations and Chuck Jordan giving his presentations. And, you know, they'd have some people from Europe as well and in Japan. So, but it just, it kind of died off. And fortunately, we picked it up. We picked it up, and it's really grown. We outgrew the space at one point because when I was doing it with 4 Day, they really wanted big entertainment.
Uh-huh.
You know, Earl Klugh, Alexander Sanchez, these kind of people. So we had to move the venue because we couldn't contain the band and the production, the lights and everything. No, it went from modest to...
Over the top.
High performance, and the crowd was growing. But now it's back to, I would say it's more or less modest. I mean,
it may be modest, but I'm still really impressed with who in the design community turns out. And, you know, I get invited, and Peter does too, to all the big parties in town here for the Auto Show Week. I always come to this one because it's by far the best party in town.
That's nice to hear, and it's great for everybody that works very hard on it. You know, we have a very good committee. It's not really big that you know, works with us, works with me, and we start getting things in order. You know, come like October. October is a good time, you know, to start getting things in perspective. And then there's all our sponsors. This year we had 13, 14 sponsors. They rotate. It's great to mention that Autodesk has been the headlining sponsor.
The software company, right?
Yeah, software company. The one that provides pretty much the state of the art for the automotive design, you know, computer tools.
Mm-hmm.
So they've been fantastic. And I mean, I appreciate everything that even, you know, the smaller sponsors come in and kick in because, you know, we got accumulations of, you know, there's valet, there's the coat check, there's...
You got to pay people to put on the party.
Yeah, it's growing, but in a pinch, I can do it for very little. I do remember the first few, you know, with very important people here and just a keg and a lot of artwork. Some music, some very local artists. I like the local artists. I like using downtown talent, you know, because the people that fly here from Japan, you know, I think they really appreciate to hear that kind of music.
Yeah.
You know, these are the boys from, you know, down over there in the Eastern Market.
Yeah.
And we used to have some playing and they'd be like, not even duct tape, but like masking tape on their instruments. So, you know? So you really get the feel. You see the truth.
So, Camilla, how long were you at Ford?
I was there 24 years, or almost 24 years. And
You've been gone now for how long?
2 years. Yeah. 2 years. And I went there right after college.
Yeah.
So I knew nothing else but life at Ford. And I was, you know, you become very focused and... To that, you know, to that rhythm and that company and the way things work and the people there. So it just becomes like your life. There's a lot of my friends that have gone somewhere for 5 years and done another 5 years somewhere else. And I guess they learn, you know, how to, you know, roll with the changes. I mean, working with Ford was great because I worked in Italy and Cologne twice each, you know, different things. And I mean, in Italy, going back
Torino,
and forth.
Italy?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
In Torino, going back and forth because during the Ford GT program, there was a lot of things that we had to handle in Italy, including Sparco, who provided the seats. And because I'd lived there for 3 years at one point, I knew a lot of people there, so when I went back there, it was definitely a good time to catch up, you know. And it's Torino was like is very similar to Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Motor City of Italy.
Cool city.
Yeah.
I love it there. I really do.
Beautiful city. In fact,
I would say right now it's my favorite city in Italy.
But I did learn that the people that had lived there their whole life, they didn't like it, you know. They wanted to get out of here. They're like, oh, Torino. You know, I'm like, this is great, man. But it's just like people from Detroit who've been here their whole life. They're like, I got to get out of here. But I guess it doesn't matter where you are. You just got to get out of there at some point.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the GT. How did you get that program to do?
I was working in the advanced studio, and my friends and I, we had like 15 years into the company. So we were well exercised, you know, we were efficient, we knew what we were doing. We were a good team. We had a good director that was very enthusiastic. Unlike many people in a company like Ford that is a leading company for sedans and SUVs, I had 3 mid-engine cars under my belt by the time I left. I had worked on one as soon as I was hired.
Which was what?
It was a confidential car that didn't make it out.
Oh, interesting. Oh, okay. Yeah,
I would say it was a good learning experience, and it was a very exciting thing for somebody getting out of college. And then we got involved with the GT90.
Right.
And that was under my director, and they really didn't bring in much of a design team. He was very hands-on, the vehicle, and he was extremely, focused on using state-of-the-art technology, you know, math surface and everything. But I developed the whole sketch program, and was doing full-size tape drawings, which was great. You know, I love that, airbrushing and, you know, a wall of sketches of nothing but excitement. You know, it was a dream project. As it started, you know, I was scheduled to go to Italy, so I worked on it as long as I could, did a lot of research. We reviewed some beautiful cars at the time.
And this is the GT90 that you're talking about, yeah.
The GT90. And then I went to Italy. When I got back, I worked on the T-Bird, some hydrogen cars, and before I knew it, they said, well, at that point, it was simply called the GT40. You know, they says, you guys are going to be on the team for the GT40. And when people tell you that, I mean, yes, you're very happy, but at the same time, you do know that these projects could fall out. You know, the bottom can fall out of them at any time. So you enjoy, you know, every day that you can work on it. And it continued. And Jay gave me the responsibility of SVT design. So that got integrated into SVT. So I was working on, you know, the Cobra or GT500 and the SVT Focus and the Lightning and the Ford GT. And basically, I just thought, I have arrived. I have definitely arrived to what I wanted to do when I was 10 or whatever. I mean, that was the most ultimate studio. We would have, you know, we'd have an original GT40 in there as reference. We'd have a Cobra, you know, as reference, you know, Shelby's Cobra. We would have the concept car, clay model. I mean, there was nothing but the best things that you could imagine in that studio. It was so exciting. We pushed it through. There was some points, you know, where things got very challenging, and we had to push. We actually had to move the GT40. At the moment it was a GT40, the Petunia, as everybody knows, that it was a code name Petunia. We had to move that aside, finish the SVT Mustang, which was a Cobra at the time, and you know, then all of a sudden, you know, the word comes in, can you guys clean that car up and get it ready for a research in a couple weeks? And oh my God, all right, great. get it up on the pins and start dressing that car. And it was great. Like I said, there was some points where you thought it was completely done, and then all of a sudden you had, you know, deadlines and responsibilities to meet. But if I could say one thing about that car, is that car had all the time, you know, in the studio to work out the details, work out the proportions. It went through several shapes and iterations. You wouldn't even recognize it. And it matured. We had, you know, we had original GT40 to compare it to, which was the main target.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had the state-of-the-art Ferrari that would have been the 360 to compare it to, you know, when we reviewed it. And although I wasn't a very big fan of the 360, it was muscular, and it was really aggressive looking. It was tough. I mean, it was an awesome Ferrari. And there was a point where we kept modifying the clay until we were always trying to keep it lean. I don't know if that car looks lean. The GT looks lean. We left a lot of things behind that we had done in the 80s, like very crowned surfaces. The GT has like surfaces that are minimal in crown. That remind me of like early 70s Mach 1s and late 60s Mach 1s, where they're really kind of flat here and there. So at one point, it made the Ferrari look kind of pudgy and, over rounded. And our car looked lower, leaner, and cleaner. And it made the original GT40, it made it look much older and like...
The original car was smaller, though, wasn't it?
Yeah. But the original car, I mean, you get in that thing, it's like getting into an old warplane.
Yeah.
You know, it's got all the rivets are here and there, and everything is kind of, you know, very aggressive in the way it's executed in metal and the air intakes and stuff. So it really, and the smell, you know, that old leather smell, and it didn't have much leather in it, but that, it was like an old warplane, and our car felt like you were getting into a new state-of-the-art fighter. I mean, we had the state-of-the-art aerospace technology in it. We learned a lot. That car, we learned a lot about production for aluminum and how to handle aluminum. Aluminum's very sensitive about the way you weld it and assemble it, because it'll change properties if it's heated too much. So,
because we're going live with this live UPAC, you know, this is normally where we bring up rapid fire with the graphic and everything. So we'll just go just to sort of do the soundtrack of it. Anyway, we're now into rapid fire. And so we've got some questions here for you, Camillo. B-Mad GT500 says, rumor has it Ford's working on a new and updated Ford GT. True?
I haven't heard anything, and I don't know if they would feel compelled that they have to tell me this, but there is always that excitement inside Ford. I mean, I never knew a year where somebody was not thinking about, you know, what would be the next great car to do. So I sure hope so, and I hope that they can grow from what we did. It's a good foundation, and there was a lot of good components. You know, the best people that we could get to work on it. So,
Would you do a new GT, Peter?
No.
I would not either. I think you nailed it too much. I think they should go look for something else to do rather than try to do a new generation GT.
Well, I would see it like, you know, Chevy's Corvette. It has the opportunity to evolve.
Okay.
It is definitely time, you know, to resurface, you know, the vehicle. And there's a lot that you have to consider. You know, think about what Ferrari can do at this point, because they're usually the target. and think about what Ferrari will cost at this point. So you've got what they cost and what how they can perform. And those are two things to that fall into the equation.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how far Ford could push the price tag of a vehicle like that. It was already extremely, you know, a big reach, you know, to sell a vehicle for $160,000 and up, a little bit higher. And if you're going to compete...
As a Ford.
But
for what it was a screaming bargain.
It was a screaming bargain. You got a lot of hardware for your money. Now, if you're going to play in that field's extremely aggressive and onto new levels.
Right. Okay, Goggles Pisano asks, question for the panel and the guest. Is it a requirement for designers to grow facial hair to be taken seriously? I guess he thinks a lot of designers have beards or mustaches. Anyway, he says, okay, serious question. How would you incorporate Lancia and Chrysler together design-wise, and which cars would you incorporate into a Lancia-Chrysler lineup?
That's, you know.
Well, yes, go ahead.
No, that's like a couple of days long.
It probably is. Right.
But I always thought about Chrysler and Fiat. Mm-hmm. Isn't that the combo?
Yeah, well, you know, Fiat's got the Lancia brand as well as Alfa Romeo. And now they're going to use Chrysler brand and Lancia brand together.
Yeah.
I think it's a looming train wreck.
It could be.
Well,
it
Lancia has some great cars like the Beta Coupe.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the Beta Coupe and the Fulvia?
Right.
A rally car.
Stratos.
Yeah, and the Stratos.
Stratos is one of my favorites.
All-time favorite cars. Of all time, of any kind, right.
But, I mean, we are thinking strictly performance and ignoring everything else. But
he's talking about blending, you know, of which luxury Chrysler will become a luxury Lancia. And,
I think it could be a mess because if Lancia is true to its own design heritage, which is where they're trying to get back mm-hmm. to, it's Lancia's design heritage. I'm sorry. And to try and mix and match stuff with Chrysler and them, I think you could be right, Peter. It could be a train
wreck. You have to keep their identity, their original identity, like when Ford was with Jaguar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jaguar was Jaguar, Aston was Aston, you know. And but it would be interesting to see, you know, the Integrale and all that come back, you know, with all Martini racing excitement.
Okay, Mr. Pardo, what's your vision of what a Ford GT successor would be? Please say it will be powered by a twin-turbo 5-liter EcoBoost engine with way too much horsepower. And that's from Youngblood, which he says, very cold in Cleveland.
Yeah.
So what's, what would you do with the GT?
Well, EcoBoost is a good medium to use, and it's, you know, it's a great awakening that, you know, the companies can go back to turbochargers and bring back that whole excitement and racing and high performance. So, all right, so you get rid of the supercharger, and many people are turbocharging GTs now. So you have that as, you know, a power plant and the best geometry that you can get out of, you know, the suspension and you know, and steering and all that, and you probably have to be all in aluminum. But then the surface development is going to have the big impact because you expect the best performance out of everything else. But the surface development is going to have to launch it into the next, you know, the next phase. I thought that there was a good start with the GT90. It was actually too far advanced for most people.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of a spaceship.
I loved it.
For the consumer to
really
understand.
I really liked that a lot.
Yeah, very modernistic.
Yeah, but there's something to feed off of there. Ford of Europe has a very strong, you know, surface understanding, something that's matured, you know, that you could see today at the auto show with the Kuga concept car.
Right.
And if you're going to follow, you know, a DNA that's growing, I imagine it would echo along those lines.
Mm-hmm. Unsprung wants to know, how do you design a car that was already designed 40 years ago?
Literally extremely, extremely carefully. There's lines that you have to follow. And like you mentioned, there are a lot of vehicles that have been redesigned, and it's a sensitive area. It's a sensitive area because it has such a strong background. And when you do that, there's a lot of things to balance. How much to pull away and how to pull away. You know, how to carefully introduce, you know, a new surface development, something more mature that actually adds and grows with the previous one, and at the end improves it. That I can remember them pushing an old GT40 into my studio, and this guy come up to me and says, "You are so lucky to be doing this." And then he stopped for a second. And he goes, "You are going to make it better than that, right?" And I looked at that car, and that car was just fantastic. And I says, "Well, now we've got our work cut out, you know."
What was amazing to me is when I first saw the GT, I went, "Okay, you know, they had to do some things because this is a street car, not just, you know, for the track." And then the more and more I looked at it, I realized, oh my God, it looks exactly like the old one, and it looks completely different than the old one.
And it was physically, it's a bigger car.
Yeah. Well, it's like fashion, really, in many ways. I always use that as reference to automotive design. If you designed an outfit for a girl from the 60s, and you designed an outfit for a girl from 2015, she's still going to have, you know, hair, face, arms, legs. You know, she's going to be, what, you know, 5'10", or whatever. So you got all those basic, you know, elements. Now it's up to you, you know, to do the a new layout. So she's still going to be a girl, right?
Mm-hmm. So let's see. We've got one more question here that not apropos of the GT40 or you particular, but why are there not more concept cars at the auto show? There weren't very many this year.
You know, I think the emphasis over the last few years has been on production-based stuff. So if there is a concept like the new version of the Kuga, it's grounded in what's coming. They're the Blue Sky, the famous show where we had, what, the Cadillac 16 and Chrysler had some, you know, there was that milestone show where everyone had a concept. It's going to take a while before we get there. We may never get there again. Uh-huh. I think different manufacturers will appear each year with a concept when they feel it's appropriate to go. But that's why you didn't see very many.
I wonder if it's too, you know, the big downturn of the last 2 years, all kinds of budgets got
slashed.
Well,
that's what I meant. I mean, it was just, you know, it's going to take a while to ramp up to that again.
Yeah, if there is a concept car, it has to have a significant message to what's really going to happen or how this is really going to influence. It has to make sense. There is no, you know, I don't think there's, you know, the atmosphere to just, like, go shooting off, you know, Blue Sky for the fun of it.
So tell us a little bit about the studio and start with the art that you've got on the walls here.
All right, John. What you're looking at right now is actually the work that I've been doing in the last couple years. This is my automotive fine art, and all of it is commission work. This commission work usually involves paintings of Ford GTs for private owners or even up to like the Matek race team that was racing GT1 the last couple years. There are some people that give me a break from that, and I get to do a Lamborghini or a Ferrari. The Formula One stuff that you see around, that's pretty much for myself, but those pieces do really well in different exhibits. Exhibits like, you know, like, for example, at SEMA, or if I do a concourse, you know, a concourse like Glenmore or maybe Meadowbrook. I was fortunate to show at Pebble Beach, and I really like Pebble Beach, and I am a big fan of the AFAS artists.
So tell me, here I'm looking at a picture, very dramatic painting of the Ford GT. This thing's got to be, what, 4 or 5 feet long? It's got to be 2 feet high. How long does it take to paint something like that?
It's interesting. It depends how alarming the deadline is. Literally, I was contacted by a friend, and he said, "It's my buddy's birthday, you know, in a week and a half. Can you do it?" Yes, I can do it. It's a red GT. Well, that's a formula that I have down. I really have that palette, you know, worked out. I'm not going to be out there experimenting. So I laid this thing out pretty fast, very, very fast, and everything went well on that painting. There's some paintings that I struggle with up to, like, 2 years. I have to come back, go back and forth with it and try a few things. This one went right down the line. Everything was, you know, in order.
And you do all the painting right here in the studio?
Yeah, pretty much right where we're standing. You know, this is a very, very functional space. It's a space where I can do all my artwork in different mediums. I can do my computer work here. I can do my paintings here. I can stretch canvas. I can make my frames. I even work on my Mustang over there, you know, fix the clutch, things like that. And I host a lot of different artists here, so it's a great spot.
Well, let's move up to this second level that's behind us here, and you've got a couple of cars up here, and you got to explain what this is all about. It looks like a vintage Fiat Cinquecento.
Yes, this is a Cinquecento that I bought in Torino, and I actually had three of them there. I start accumulating cars. It's this thing that happens with me, and I know that we all know people that have this situation. But I bought one to drive. I gained one as parts, and then I couldn't ship mine home because it was too new, so I had to quickly buy one that was like 3 years older to be exempt from all of the regulations. I drove this in Detroit for a few years. Unfortunately, I haven't driven it out of the front room in more than 3 years. That's too long, and it's a functional vehicle. It's licensed and tagged for Michigan.
And what's this other one that you've got up here with all the Ford Racing graphics on it? Looks like one of the new Fiestas, but totally tricked out.
Yeah, this Fiesta was put together by Ford Racing. It is equipped with the EcoBoost engine. It has 350 horsepower. And it was for SEMA this last November, 2010. The idea was that they want the whole Ford presence is very large at SEMA, and they wanted to have a very artistic graffiti kind of atmosphere. So they had a lot of art in that area. They asked me to do an art car. There was several art cars done in the past. BMW had a series done with Warhol, Liechtenstein, Stella.
The art car, Peter is saying, yeah.
And then Porsche had some fantastic art cars that were racing Le Mans. Last year at Le Mans, there was an art car done by Jeff Kuhn, and it was a BMW. I was fortunately there, and I didn't think. It's a wrap. They wrapped it. Because it would have been ridiculously expensive to paint the car that they did. This vehicle, we put up vertical in the center of the Ford stand, and I had done a drawing that kind of predicted what would happen if I went up on a lift and poured paint on it. You know, and these were the colors that represented Ford Racing, was the blue and the orange and white. So I did a drawing. They liked it. We got a bunch of paint in those 5 gallon buckets and a lift, and I went up there and, you know what? Well, you know, there was no practice or anything, and a lot of people were coming up to me going, "Aren't you going to practice?" And I says, "Well, I pour paint on all these canvases all the time, so I pretty much I know how paint's going to respond."
So wait a minute. This paint job is literally you put this thing nose up and poured paint down it?
Yeah, I literally poured paint all over it. You know, with
nose.
Yes, that's the key factor. We taped off the windows, we taped off the headlamps and the air intakes. And the other idea was that I had graphics all over it. The EcoBoost Ford Racing and the 350 horsepower graphics on it, and the idea was to pour the paint on there and then simply peel the graphics off and expose the original color of the car. But this you know, this latex paint, exterior latex, is so strong that it's so thick. I mean, imagine trying to peel the paint off your house, you know, or your front porch or something. It's got to be guaranteed for 10 years, isn't it? With all kinds of weather. But, yeah, it happened like that. And I even had the ability to control the proportions in the application. So, and the other part about it is that when it was going to be laid back down on its four wheels, is that the paint was going to look like it went through, like the vehicle went through paint, you know, at 150 miles an hour. So it's all completely horizontal, and it goes all of the way back to the back. I mean, we dribble some ink and different things like that on clay models in the wind tunnel. And when you put the ink on, it just rolls all the way to the back and kind of gives you an idea of the body and the way the air is flowing over the body. So this has a little bit of that. But if you really went crazy in the wind tunnel and started, you know, throwing the paint, and it gets windy in there, you know, 120 miles an hour, whatever you want, you know, 70. This would probably be 120 miles an hour, 150 miles an hour.
No, you're right. I mean, it has fluidity of motion to it, just the way that the paint went down there. And I love how it all sort of splattered on the big wing on the back of it, too.
Yeah, no one predicted that, well, especially myself. But since the rear of the car was so close to the bottom, you'd be surprised how high you have to go on a lift. You think it's a little Fiesta. I was way up high. And by the time that paint was hitting the ground, it was exploding. So it was, they were protecting the people around them with plastic and the cars around them and anybody that was being interviewed, you know, so that they wouldn't get all, you know, painted on. But it hit and it would explode. And the back got a completely different personality than the front. In fact, I've gotten a lot of good comments about the back, you know, so that worked out, you know, very well.
Well, let's go in the back room here and take a look at what other cars that you've got in your studio. Yeah, it's a little bit colder here in the garage. But, yeah, tell us what you've got here.
Okay. As I was, you know, as the years accumulated at Ford, you know, I went through a couple Porsches, and then I had a 308, and finally achieved one of my favorite cars was a 512 BB, the Boxer Ferrari. That car, when I was in college, was, you know, the ultimate of ultimate. I think you can remember the road and track issue with the Countach and the Boxer on the bank corner. And I mean, that car, when I finally bought that car, I couldn't even believe it. I couldn't believe when they gave me the keys and I walked to the lot and they were letting me put the keys in so I could go away in it. That was surreal. I was just, really? You know, after all that paperwork? Okay, so that is a staple as far as design, and it's Leonardo Fioravanti, you know, and I sat next to him on a plane going from Paris or Torino to Paris, and I told him, when I go home, I'm going to buy your cars, and I eventually owned the 308 and his 512, and that's his portfolio. And then as soon as, you know, we got done with the 4GT program, they were available. I was fortunate enough to get on the list and put together enough, you know, to buy a 4GT. I bought a white one. I bought the base 4GT that was like a stripped down model. And like Peter Horbury said, it was a poor man's GT. If that could ever really happen, but that was my original car from the factory, and it had, you know, my name on the sill. It said Chief Designer Camillo Pardo, 4GT, and it was a very special car, and a lot of collectors understood that would be a special car. That was my car from the production line. I sold it after a couple years to a collector and immediately bought a heritage vehicle, a heritage GT. I went through two Heritage GTs and was a little bit worried about letting the last one go because that is literally the most beautiful, I thought, you know, of the pack, you know, with the blue. Yeah, the Golf. And mine was all set up with the Golf graphics and the black wheels and lowered. I mean, it looked like it had rolled off the track. It had a great look. And I sold the vehicle to another collector, and I bought a white one. This was the best example of a white GT when I purchased it. It was clean. It had 1,800 miles on it, and it was from 2005, and I bought this in 2010. Took it right to the paint shop, and my buddies disassembled it, and I did this livery on the vehicle that is not available. It's a one of a kind. It's my own art piece, and it's starting to generate commissions. I already have a personal GT of somebody else's that wants me to do a one-of-a-kind signature vehicle, and I am more than happy to do this for anybody. I, you know, sit down, we'll work with a palette, we'll work out, you know, the whole look of the vehicle. I'll design a number. I actually tape it out because I'm very particular about the tape lines. They got to be just right and the size of everything. So I walk this thing carefully through all of its steps, and it has a regular recipe of 650 horsepower with the pulley and tune, bumper delete, and performance exhaust. And each time I try to squeeze in more things that were not available in production that I wanted.
Okay, why the number 7 on this?
I like the geometry of the 7, simple enough. I did a number 4 that went over quite well, and it was very digital. It looked kind of Tron, you know, and this, now it was time to move along from the 4, and I did the 7, and I really think that it works well with the vehicle. Actually, when you look at the door cuts and the treatment around the lift handles, it does look like the same guy that did the door cuts did the 7, so I'm very happy with it.
And one more car here, Fastback Mustang 67?
Yes, this is 67. Now and then you get this thing inside you that you need to have a certain car, and I got it for that one. You know, I always wanted a fastback, you know, 67. I also am a big fan of a mid-60s Corvette, but at some point I got this, you know, feeling inside me that I really had to have one of these, and I, you know, you almost start worrying like there isn't any left, you know, as you're searching through all the magazines, the internet, and it's like you have to buy one now before something happens and they're all done. But so I got that, and I got it out of my system. I flew out to California to look at this particular car, got in it, liked it, and wired the money and drove it home. We drove it home. It was like Christmas, so it was cold. And we tried to take the lowest route across, you know, over in north of Mexico. And then as soon as we got more or less above Detroit, we just beeline straight up, and we were fortunate not to hit any snow. We went all the way across with no stereo. And it's cold in that car. I mean, at night in the desert, during the winter, is very cold. So, we were wrapped in those Indian black blankets that you can find at the gas stations. And down there, it was very cool, and saw a lot of good friends and had it on the track within days. We actually made a little movie that was playing on YouTube about it.
That is so cool. Well, Camilo, we're going to wrap it up here, but thanks so much for bringing us in the studio and the garage here. And Peter, thank you as always.
Thanks, John.
Yeah, no, great show.
Another big week at Detroit. That was good.
It definitely was good. So thanks again, man. Really appreciate it. And
anytime, guys.
Cool.
Check it out, see what's going on.
Well, at the very least, we'll be back for the Designer's Night Party.
Yeah, that'll be our 15th. Looking forward to that.
Real good. And I'm going to sign off by thanking our sponsors once again. Bridgestone, passion for excellence. Check it out at bridgestonetire.com. Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze. Get used to more. And, of course, you can get that at chevrolet.com/cruise. And Dow Automotive Systems, improving durability and increasing design flexibility with Betamate structural adhesives at DowBetamate.com. Thanks much, everybody. We'll see you next week. And, oh, yeah, that's right. We'll be at the Chrysler Styling Dome next week, and we'll be talking with the head of product development for Chrysler then. Anyway, thanks again. See you next week.